Hello, and welcome to this new show called Ayurveda, the Science of Life, on UK Health Radio. My name is Dr. Oscar Adukon. I'm working as an Ayurvedic practitioner in Belfast, Northern Ireland, following a career working as a GP, family doctor, throughout the UK and Ireland. In this show, I will introduce the listener to the ancient system of medicine known as Ayurveda, which is still in use today and growing in popularity worldwide. I will explain the origins and principles of Ayurveda and give clear, simple, understandable explanations for how it can work in our modern lives. I will discuss how Ayurveda can connect us to our own nature, as well as the wider world of nature around us. We are all part of nature and need to restore these connections in our daily lives. I will interview like-minded therapists and health experts to discuss their approach to health and wellness and how it connects with Ayurveda. This show aims to reflect the growing move away from the narrow confines of conventional medicine to a deeper, more holistic and personalized view of health and wellness. Ayurveda is a nature-based system which uses food, simple herbal remedies, daily practices, and herbal-based medications to achieve balance of body and mind. So much of the root cause of illness today are caused by our digestion and lifestyle. Ayurveda teaches us that everything we do in our lives has an effect upon our well-being and health. On this show, I hope to teach you and show you how learning about Ayurveda will benefit you and your health now and into the future. So on today's show, I thought what I should do is do a common questions that are get asked about Ayurveda and a brief recap on some of the areas I've covered over the last number of weeks. And a common question I get asked about Ayurveda, because people may have heard of the phrase and know it's something to do with traditional type of medicine associated with India, or they may know nothing at all about it. And a question I get asked is, what is Ayurveda all about? Where does it come from? Is it still in use today? And what is the application that it has at this moment in time, with everything changing in the healthcare world and how we provide healthcare to people? There's an increase in chronic illnesses, and there's an exponential rise in the costs of healthcare that are being felt in the Western world, particularly in the United States and particularly in the UK. The NHS is going through a period of crisis with problems with funding and staff and morale. And I feel more and more people are having to rely on themselves rather than to have to always rely on their GP or the hospital to look after their health. Now, if you've heard about Ayurveda, but you're not aware of Ayurvedic medicine, I'm going to try and explain what Ayurvedic medicine is and how it applies at this moment in time. Now, Ayurveda is an ancient system of medicine that originated in India, and it dates back about 5,000 years, and it's still in use today. So that makes it one of the oldest continuous systems of medicine that we know, as well as the classical Chinese medicine, which has undergone quite significant changes in the last 100 years. Now, Ayurveda is spreading popularity in the West, as traditional Chinese medicine has done over the last several decades. And certainly Ayurveda will go through some changes, much like traditional Chinese medicine did as well, in order for it to be applied and used in a Western context. But the principles are still the same. And I like to describe Ayurveda as not just a system of medicine, but it's also as much a system of life or lifestyle or a way of living. Now, at the time Ayurveda developed, of course, we didn't have the benefits of modern science in terms of investigations and scans, blood tests and x-rays and so on. And I remember when I started in medicine many, many years ago, the one lesson I learned from the lecturers was that 85% of your diagnosis is made on your history, and 10% or so is made in your clinical examination, where you're following any any clues that have come up during the history or when you were talking to the patient, and only 5% of the diagnoses are made on your investigations. And clearly in modern medicine, this has changed. This ratio has changed significantly. And we rely more and more on tests and investigations to lead us to diagnosis. But at the time of the Ayurvedic beginnings, these were not available. So the word Ayurveda stands for the science of life. So it's a compound word. A Veda being a science or a body of knowledge, and Ayur being life. Both of these are Sanskrit terms, and they've joined the two words together to make this word Ayurveda, which is a bit of a mouthful, but it captures the essence of what Ayurveda is about. It's the science of life or the science of living. And it's like a protocol or a set of guidelines on how you should live, how you should sleep, what and how you should eat for your particular constitution, and how you should manage external factors such as stress, work, relationship, change of season and weather, and many other external factors in the environment that impinge upon our health and well-being. And of course, as well as traditional Chinese medicine, the focus back then and still now today in Ayurveda is on the prevention of disease by maintaining your natural balance, as well as maintaining our vitality, our light force to ensure longevity and healthy aging into later decades. Now, healthy aging is a common, it's in vogue now, this phrase, but this was considered the norm by Ayurvedic customs and standards, and not the exception as we tend to think of it nowadays, which is unfortunate. But this was the whole concept of Ayurveda, that if you followed the principles and the guidelines to maintain your natural balance, you would ensure longevity and vitality into your later decades. Now, the crucial point is that the development of Ayurveda as a system of medicine was that the ancient practitioners developed a deep understanding of how the human body and the human mind, about diseases, about the factors that contribute to longevity, and all of the factors that determine our health and well-being. So they were scrutinizing or examining the human condition, and they were coming up with inferences or observations or conclusions that they made over time, over many thousands of years, and they were writing them down in a body of text known as the Vedas. And this developed into the tradition or system of medicine known as Ayurveda. And it has increasing application in today's world, because we have found that despite the advances we've made in modern technology in medicine, we still have the same chronic illnesses that are affecting us, and we're having newer illnesses that are cropping up all the time, and we're struggling to improve people's health despite the technological advances we're making in modern medicine. And certainly we have made some incredible strides in terms of, particularly in terms of surgery, orthopedic surgery, cardiovascular surgery, and in many other areas we've made some huge advances and made lots of difference to people's lives. But it still doesn't change the fact that chronic illnesses such as diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease are still on the rise despite all that. Another question I get asked quite a lot is, what are the similarities and the differences between Ayurveda and another traditional systems of medicine and modern medicine? And where does it kind of fit in the 21st century? But this is like a follow-on to what I was talking about earlier on. And it's a topic of great interest to me, because there are parallel similarities between Ayurveda and traditional Chinese medicine. And this is not an unusual phenomenon, because they developed in and around the same time. And almost certainly there was quite a lot of cross-contact between
the area where India now is and China, through the Silk Route and through trading routes and through the spread of Buddhism into China. And there are similarities within the principles and teachings of both systems. And it's mainly in how a diagnosis is reached and this concept of the root causes of disorder or disease, and in course the importance of the body and mind connection. And this is also coming back into vogue in our modern times or in modern medicine, that the body and mind are so closely connected. Whereas previously, the belief or the thinking was that they weren't so connected and we were dealing with different parts of the body separately. But in Ayurveda and in traditional Chinese medicine, the body-mind connection is vital. It's a vital part of our understanding of why we get ill. So the study of the human body in both disciplines had to take what's called a diagnostic approach, much like I talked about earlier on, where the history was the most important part of your assessment and the examination, not quite as important, but far more important than any tests and investigations that you would do. So this diagnostic approach does not rely so much on tests. It relies on inspecting someone, looking at their skin, looking at their tongue, checking their pulse, seeing the color of their skin and their eyes, also looking at the urine and the stool and the sweat and waste products, and coming to conclusions about what is happening overall in the patient that's causing them to become ill. So in other words, it's all about history and observation of each patient and their unique set of circumstances. And also in both systems is this concept of balance and how being out of balance causes illness or what we call dis-ease. So you're out of ease with your normal self when you're out of balance, and this can make you more at risk of getting an illness or a disorder. And also, like in Ayurvedic medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, they rely a lot on the use of natural herbs and plant-based medications, which have been observed over time to have preventative and curative properties for disease and disorders and illness. So Ayurveda and Chinese medicine are similar, as I said before, in that they look to prevent a disease before it manifests, rather than attacking the symptom only after the disease has manifested and become established. And this is a common shared way of working if in both disciplines. And also there's the concept of energy flow channels in the body, which can be assessed using special massage technique. And this is used in Ayurveda through a system called Marma points. Now there are 108 Marma points in the body, and they're similar to what's called the meridian channels, as you described in traditional Chinese medicine. And these are points in the body where there's a confluence or a meeting of the five elements, and they occur in different tissue layers, especially in the muscle layer. And they are particularly powerful points where manipulation of the tissues around these points can cause beneficial effects and positive effects for our overall health. So they can be manipulated to release energy. They can be manipulated to cause detoxification with the particular tissue layers, and also to improve circulation within the body channels. And this does not just mean the channels or the body channels of the arteries and veins, but it means the lymphatic systems and all the other channels, the nervous system as well, that are present within our tissues. And this type of therapeutic massage can be done by a trained practitioner who knows where these important points are, and they can use medicated oils for an improved effect. And even though these techniques need a qualified practitioner to do, we recommend using basic forms of these techniques, not using the Marma points, but in terms of using a self-massage or Abhyanga pipe massage for self-care practice. And if you are prescribed medicated oil, once again, the effect would be enhanced. Now, I'll come back in the next part of the show where I'll discuss some of the fundamental principles that underpin the teachings of Ayurveda in relation to the doshas
and the elements, which I've discussed in a previous show, but they're worth recap. So see you back very shortly after a few minutes break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back to the show, Ayurveda, the Science of Life. A key concept of Ayurveda are the doshas or energies. And if anybody has heard about Ayurveda before, they will often mention the doshas and talk about the personality types associated with different doshas. Now, the doshas are one of the fundamental principles of Ayurveda. And the term that's used to describe it is the tridoshic principle. So let's start with the question, first of all, what are the doshas and how do we define them? And this is a difficult question to define in a literal sense or in a scientific way, as there is so much to the doshas that not just comprise our physical form and type, but it also describes our psychological traits as well. And there can be overlap between the different doshas. But I'll do my best to try and describe it. Fundamentally, there are three doshas. Vata dosha, which is the master dosha, which controls all the movement processes within the body. The Pitta dosha, which is the dosha of transformation or of change within the body, which is associated with metabolism and digestion, and the Kapha dosha, which is associated with structure and support and stability and growth as well. And as I said, the concept of these three doshas making up our constitution is known as the tridosha principle. Now, Ayurveda is a very nature-based system of medicine. It was developed over thousands of years before the advent of technology. And it believes that everything in nature and in the wider universe is made up of the five elements, or combinations of the five elements. And these five elements are air, space, fire, water, and earth. And if you look at things in detail, and in the new scientific findings, confirm this fact that was established in Ayurveda many thousands of years ago. And essentially, the Tridosi principle explains how these five natural elements combine to express themselves in each of our bodies and minds. So it's the combination of these five elements that's expressed through these three doshas that makes up our individual constitutions. So Vata is the air and space, or ether, which is fundamentally to do with movement, if you think of the wind as movement. Pitta is fire and water, which is to do with fire and transformation, metabolism, digestion. And Kapha is water and earth. And these are to do with stability, structure, and support. Now, an important thing to clarify is that all of us have three doshas in our body, not just one, but three doshas. However, we, for simplicity's sake, and out of habit, we tend to talk about a person's dominant or predominant dosha, or their constitutional type. That is, am I a Vata, am I a Pitta, am I Kapha, and which is the more dominant in my particular constitution. So many people end up thinking that you are only just one dosha, but you're a combination of doshas with one predominant one. Often maybe one and another one alongside it, and a third one being less apparent or less obvious in your presentation. And we call this your doshic identity. We call it your prakruti, which is another Sanskrit name or Sanskrit term. And the definition of this term is the original or natural form or condition of anything, original or primary substance, before anything can have an impact upon it to make a change. Just like the original purest form of a substance, thing, or person, or body. And this is what we mean by our natural constitution, or our true self. And sometimes, and quite often, this changes based on our lifestyle, our diet, nutrition, our habits, and many other external factors that can impinge upon us in our daily lives. And when this change happens to our prakriti, and I hesitate to use the word change because it's more like a difference in the expression of our natural self. But we call it change, once again, for simplicity's sake, because there is a change happening in a way to cause an imbalance. So when this change happens, our natural constitution goes into something which is called a vikruti, which is another Sanskrit term, and yes, they can be confusing, but this prakriti is defined as our current state of imbalance. Our current state of imbalance. And this imbalance can be managed most of the time without even noticing it. But if it becomes more pronounced or more severe, that's when we start developing problems. So when you see an Ayurvedic practitioner, this is what they will try and do. They will try and make an estimate or an assessment of what your natural constitution is. And this is quite a subtle process, because often you are imbalanced and that's the most obvious presentation that you'll be showing the practitioner. But once you recognize the imbalance, we'll try and work you back towards your natural state or your prakriti. So you're getting back into your natural self. So the focus is in getting your doshas and your energies balanced. And that's the aim of treatment. So we spot the imbalance within the doshas that's causing the problems, and we try and reverse that to try and get you back into your natural prakriti, or your natural state. So I hear you ask, how does an Ayurvedic practitioner bring you back to your natural state of balance? What techniques do we use? Well, simply, what we look at is what has caused you to become imbalanced in the first place. And we reverse these factors. And we would look at your food choices and make suggestions accordingly. We would look at your nutrition and how you're digesting, because a fundamental concept in Ayurveda is that All disease has a root cause in your digestive process or your digestion. So that's a crucial area we look at. We will advise about the use of herbs and spices. We will recommend lifestyle practices which are beneficial for your current imbalance and daily routines that you can start, develop good habits around your meal times, around meditation and breath work and sleep hygiene. We will prescribe herbal remedies, many of which can be done quite simply at home with a little bit of practice. And also, an Ayurvedic practitioner can also prescribe herbal medications, which are based on plant-based products, are derived from plant-based products. And these are medications that have been observed over time to treat specific imbalances. And they have many and varied effects, particularly on the digestive system, but also on the nervous system and on the mind as well. Some of these medications are, you may have heard of, are increasingly popular now. Ashwagandha and Shatavari and Guttakulu are a few examples of these. These work very powerfully on our tissues at a cellular level to make the changes and unblock any channels that are congested and remove waste and toxins from our system. So they are very effective medications to be taken in addition to the lifestyle and the dietary changes that we would recommend. Now, you may also have heard of a treatment which is commonly used in Ayurveda in a clinic setting or in at a retreat called a Panchakarma. A Panchakarma is like a severe or an aggressive type of a detoxification process, which is used in Ayurveda to cleanse and detoxify your system and to rebalance yourself. And it could be used at different times of the year or even every few years to help with a deep cleansing and detoxifying to get you back to a natural balanced state. I will discuss Panchakarma in the last part of the show in more detail. Another key concept in Ayurveda is the concept of prana, or life energy, or life force. And this is, I'm going back a little bit to what I discussed earlier on about the similarities between traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda. And you may have heard of the concept of qi, or the vital energy that's described in traditional Chinese medicine, which is similar to prana in Ayurveda. A prana in Ayurveda is defined as our life energy or our life force. It's what gives us vitality. And that has to be flowing properly for us to feel that energy. And it's the same in traditional Chinese medicine with the concept of qi. This is the life force that flows through every person, every organism, and everything in the universe. Commonly heard statement in Chinese medicine is there is no life without qi. Now, our doshas operate at a level just one step below this vital energy or prana. So if you're experiencing a significant dosha imbalance, it will impact your prana or life force. And this is why it's so important to pay attention to our dosha balance. And another important factor I mentioned before is the concept of agni or digestive fire. And this is a key determinant of our health. How well our digestive fire is working. In other words, how well we metabolize, how well we process, how well we absorb the nutrients from our food. And we can think of this like our metabolic fire. And nowadays, there's a lot of talk about metabolic health or cellular health. And we are seeing a lot of conditions that are attributed to poor metabolic health. But Ayurveda, once again, these concepts have been in Ayurvedic teachings and principles for many thousands of years. It's just that they're being reinterpreted in it with a modern lens, with the benefit of our new technologies and science. And that's probably just a little time for a little break now, and I'll go back and in the last part of the show and talk about the qualities of the different doshas and also about the ways that we can balance the different doshas, as well as discussing some of the treatments and discussing and talking a little bit more about the Panchakarma detoxifying procedures that I spoke about earlier on. So I'll see you back very shortly for the last part of the show. Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back to the show today. Today I decided to do a brief recap on some of the issues and topics I've been discussing over the last number of weeks. Particularly common questions I get asked about Ayurveda to try and explain about where it came from, the concepts that are behind the teachings and the principles, and how it can be applied in this the modern world we live in today. I discussed earlier on about the similarities between Ayurveda and traditional Chinese medicine, both of which have been around for thousands of years and are still in use today. And I discussed the concept of the tridoshic concept of the three doshas made up of the five elements and how they are present within all of us. Now, for the next part of the show, I want to discuss what it is, the qualities and the characteristics of the doshas are, because if we understand these a little bit more, we can start to understand when they go out of balance. So then, what are the characteristics or qualities of each dosha? Let's start with Vata, what's often called the master dosha, which is made up of the air and ether or space elements. You can imagine a type of person who is typically high energy and creative. They're typically very flighty, so they move about a lot, not just in their physical movement, but in their mental movement. There are people who are usually can be very anxious. You'll notice with them that they can't stay on one topic. They move about quite a bit and they can be difficult to stick to one topic at a time. But this also makes them very creative, but often very productive, but in very short bursts. And they're also people that can be generally thin and tall and have difficulty putting on weight. So if you imagine, we all know this type of person. You might even be a type of person yourself. Physically, their skin can be quite dry and their hair can be thinner and become quite frazzled and dried. And this describes a person with a dominant Vata dosha. So don't forget, this is the extreme version of it. If you think of, you must remember that we have two other doshas as well that are also fighting to make themselves and have felt in our constitution. So it's not the tip. It's not a, you will also have other doshas present as well. But if you've mostly Vata, this is how you will present. Or if you're imbalanced in the Vata dosha, you may start developing these type of behavior patterns or even these physical symptoms and traits. Now, for instance, if you're born Pitta, or Pitta is your natural constitution, and you start but you're following a Vata provoking or a Vata exacerbating diet and lifestyle, then you can start presenting like a typical Vata person. So it's out of your normal kind of, your normal trait or your normal way. You'll start behaving and you'll be clear that you'll be imbalanced in the Vata dosha because you're not your natural self. No. However, to complicate it further, Vata people tend to get Vata problems and tend to exhibit Vata imbalance, as Pitta people tend to exhibit Pitta problems. But of course, it's not exclusive. There's no one hard fast rule for everything. Now, if you are a Pitta person, or you're dominant in your Pitta constitution, you will be made up of fire and water elements, particularly the fire or the heat quality. You will have sensitive skin. You'll be very prone to redness and very prone to sunburn. But you also have a fiery personality. You can be a great orator, they make great politicians, and they're really people that are pushing for change in society. But you also will have metabolic issues that are heat related, such as digestive issues. You'd be mostly suffering from problems in the upper part of the gut, such as heartburn and acid reflux and indigestion. And finally, if you're kapha dominant or you're dominant in the kapha constitution, you are made up of the elements of water and air. And you tend to be slow and steady. So you're slow moving and deliberate in your actions and in your thoughts. You will also tend to be fairly well built and stocky and stable in your nature. So there's not a lot of shifting in you, shall we say. You're the opposite of the Vata person in that sense. Lots of chief executives in big companies and corporations have kapha-type personalities because of their organizational and decision-making ability. You're reliable, you're steady, and you're loyal. But the flip side of this is when you become in balance, your dosha gets very sluggish. So if you imagine the good qualities, you get too much of these good qualities that you have of stability, you get sluggish and slow and ponderous. And you're hard to shift or move when you've got a fixed opinion about things. You're hard even to shift physically to get up and do things. So when you're in balance, especially in the times of the kapha is most dominant in our systems during winter and spring, you will tend to put on weight. You will tend to experience lethargy and stagnation of the body and also the mind, which can lead to disease and disorder. So another question which follows on from this, how do you know if you're in your natural constitution or dosha balance, or if you're imbalanced in another dosha? So in other words, is the current me the real me? And this is a really important question, and it's a very important distinction to draw. And really, there are only two ways to do this. And the best way to do it is to see a qualified practitioner, somebody who's a practiced diagnostician at Ayurvedic examination and assessment, and they will do a full assessment and an examination, including your pulse, your eyes, your tongue, and examine your stool and your urine. They will be able to make an assessment of what your natural constitution is and where your imbalances, your current imbalances lie. Another popular way that you see more and more now online, particularly, is being invited to do a dosha quiz. And you can do a dosha quiz, that's fair enough. And maybe repeat it again a few months later at a different time of the year and see if there's any changes in it that there are, or if there's a pattern that's consistent. But this is not as reliable as going to see a practitioner, because it's very subjective. You're filling in the form yourself, and you often fill it in like you like. You fill in forms like you'd like to be rather than what you actually are. So it's a little bit confusing, to say the least. And another question I get asked is, fair, okay, you've been able to identify the imbalance. What happens next? How can you treat me? Now, an Ayurvedic practitioner, once he identifies the, or he or she identifies the imbalances, would be able to tailor recommendation based on your specific dosha imbalance. But quite often, as happens, we don't go to see the doctor or practitioner until something goes wrong in our life or in our body or in our mental health. So in some ways, we have to take a detailed assessment to look back at how and when you last felt well, or when you last felt in balance, or when in balance, or you last felt your real self, and then trying to tease out or working out what happened in the period between for you to become imbalanced. And this does require a bit of investigation and a bit of detective work, but with practice, it becomes second nature for a practitioner, and we can spot the problems usually fairly quickly. It's putting the treatment into places where the difficulties often lie. So at this stage, an Ayurvedic practitioner can tell you what your natural state is or was, and where your current imbalances lie, and how they are causing the problems you're experiencing. Then, of course, the first step would be to develop a treatment plan with the patient to reverse or remove and address these imbalances and the factors that led up to them. And using your food and your nutrition, your food choices and your nutrition and your lifestyle practices, as well as herbal medication remedies to rectify these imbalances. Now, using, as I said before, using herbal medication, herbal remedies have a powerful additional effect on reversing these imbalances and working more quickly at a tissue and a cellular level, both in our body and in our mind. Now, if you require more extensive treatment, there is a procedure called Panchakarma, which is used in clinic settings, where you will have set treatments done to you, such as massage with medicated oils, cleansing enemas, pouring of oil onto the third eye in the center of the forehead, and application of nasal medicated oil via nasal passages, as well as steam baths. And this type of procedure requires you to be prepared in advance on a specific diet, and you may also follow a more strict dietary regime during the period of time that you're having this Panchakarma, this more complete type of detoxification procedure. However, we can modify some of the types of procedures done on this Panchakarma to be used at home, such as self-massage and administration of the nasal drops, for instance. And with the help of an Ayurvedic practitioner, you could be advised about this. So you can have like a mini Panchakarma, but a smaller version of this type of detoxification regime you can use at home. There's also, what is important to mention, people often ask me, are there particular Ayurvedic practices that are worth mentioning that can be used regardless of the type of imbalance you have? And the commonest ones would be the tongue scraping, which done in the morning for about a minute. You scrape your tongue to get rid of the coating on the tongue, which is regarded in Ayurveda as ama, or toxins that accumulate overnight in your digestive tract. That's a very helpful habit to develop. Helps you improve your taste, and helps you brush your breath, and your feeling of fullness when you eat comes a bit sooner. You don't have that same effect as when you're eating. You don't start to feel full. And if we start increasing our sense of taste, we become more mindful in how we eat and how we appreciate the different tastes and qualities of food. Another thing to be aware of is food combinations. combinations which are regarded as harmful in Ayurveda would be fish and milk eaten in the same dish, or having dairy and grains together with fruit. And this is also regarded as almost you overloading your digestive system with too many different food groups to digest all at once. As well as that, there are rules regarding how to eat fruit, that you can be careful not to eat fruit too close to a meal or soon after a meal, and also not to have fruit with dairy or grains. And certain fruits are suitable for certain doshas. For instance, the sweeter fruits for the pitta dosha, such as coconuts and mangoes. The heavier fruits, such as bananas and avocados, more suitable for the vata dosha. And the astringent, the drier fruits, such as pomegranates, green apples, are more suitable for kapha. Lastly, I should mention the certain spices with special effects, and particularly cumin is very important in this regard. Cumin means digestion in Sanskrit, and cumin has a special effect in enhancing digestion of harder-to-eat foods. And it can be taken in drinks form with hot water, fennel, coriander mixed in with it. This is for a common remedy to enhance and help digestion in Ayurveda.
Tune in again next week for more discussion about Ayurveda. There's always loads to discuss. You can find more information on my website, anamayurveda.com, which is anam spelled A-N-A-M, hyphen AURVEDA.com. Anam is the Irish word for soul. Until then, as we say in Irish, Croí Fhuilán, Fad Saol. Healthy heart, long life. Take care.